come back.
So, they're called vampires for that reason. Because they just waste electricity.
Okay, we're going to reconvene the hearing on the Moser subdivision. We will now hear from the proponents, the applicant, and if the applicant has somebody who would be speaking for them, you as a representative, you will have 10 minutes for your group to make a presentation.
Good evening. Justin Gerlitz, DCS Engineering, 550 Southwest 6th Street, here on behalf of the applicant. I have heard a lot of concerns tonight, and I'm hoping that I can address many of those. I think some things are going to be handled regardless of what I even say tonight, just due to the normal county process. And Bob, that's been involved in the project, I appreciate that because he's been able to kind of summarize a lot of those concerns. So I will try to move quickly, although I think it'll take a little bit of time here, just to kind of highlight what these concerns are and how we're going to address them. Bill Galley tonight is going to speak on the water issue after me because he is by far the expert on that issue. So we'll kind of say one thing on that point, and then I'll move on to the others. One of the requests that was made on the letter through Bob Hart was showing adequate well water capacity. And one of the requests was made to drill an additional well prior to final plat on the property so we can show that there is water available on the property, and it was not all going to be taken from this well that's near the west property line. And the owner is agreeable to that, so that's something that we will commit to if it makes sense to do so. One of the points on, I'll go through Bob's comments here. I think a lot of them touch on the other concerns, and then I'll go through some of the others on the list. The second point on his list was to potentially contact the property owners along Canyon Drive and Newby Drive to look into the possibility of right-of-way dedication. One of the reasons we didn't do that is because we were looking at 3 to 4 properties that we would have to do it from. The right-of-way that was dedicated out there at 40 feet was done quite some time ago, you know, many years ago. So we were working within the constraints we had. One of the other concerns we had with that, and I'll show you here if you can see it, I kind of highlighted these areas here to show the existing roadways, and this is Mr. Fish's property right here. And as you can see, he does have a structure that's very close to the right-of-way on both sides in the corner there. So that was one of the first things we saw when we first looked into this project is, you know, widening the right-of-way there really wasn't an option because of that structure. We'd actually get into that structure. And then I just sketched out very, very approximately here. There's a garage structure up here that comes off of this driveway, in addition to some fences and everything else that's down the road. So we really tried to work with Public Works to work within that 40-foot right-of-way constraint to not impact private properties because we knew that the neighbors would not want that, and that is why we went down that road. When it comes to the actual right-of-way width or the section width here, there's been a lot of concerns about this narrowed standard. And if we look at what that is the section that the county Public Works had agreed to with us is to do 2 10.5-foot paved travel lanes and a 6-inch crushed rock shoulder. Although the standard section is wider, one of the things we have to consider is, you know, this is actually in the urban growth boundary in this little piece there, and the city's hillside standard is actually quite narrower than that. They allow a 24-foot section total, but it actually allows parking on one side 7 feet wide. So in effect, in the city of Grants Pass on the hillside areas, it allows an 8.5-foot travel lane. And I just wanted to kind of throw some out there as comparison. Another roadway, 7th Street, as you come through town, has some narrower lanes as you come through town. Those lanes, I believe, are between 9 and 10 feet. So, you know, we're still proposing a 10.5-foot paved lane here. It is fire access in the fire code requires a 20-foot lane for two-way traffic. So, again, just some references there to what that narrowest actually means. There was another question about why we proposed curbing on the Newby Road section up top and not on this lower section of Canyon Drive. Curbing is something that the County Public Works doesn't necessarily want because it's a maintenance issue in the future. This section fit in here in a more standard format, which is what we've proposed. The other section on Newby Drive has curbs because it actually side hills the grade, whereas this climbs up the grade of the hillside. So it provides us with, again, keeping within that 40-foot constraint that we were dealt with to start with on the project. One of the other things, too, was making sure we had adequate connection capability to the driveways that are next to the roadways. And that was the other thing. If we went too wide at that grade that we're stuck with, it actually cuts into the hillside substantially, which would make it much more difficult to transition to those existing driveways. So that was yet another reason that we looked at this narrowed road section. Site distance at the Canyon Drive Loop intersection seems like it was another concern. And that right here, if you can see this clearly, this is where the Canyon Drive intersection comes down the hill and actually wraps around kind of circular here, and I'll show you a picture here in a minute. The right-of-way in here is actually very wide in this area here, and this is kind of just all overgrown brushy area that was referenced. One of the things we're going to be doing, which is probably not super apparent out in the field, is this white here represents the existing driveway that comes up and goes into the house over here. The gray off to the sides is actually what we're going to be widening, the areas that we're going to be widening the road. So you can see here, as we come into the curve, we're going to widen this side, and then as we come out of the curve where that brushy area was, we're actually going to be clearing and widening on that side. So what that's going to do is give us a much better visibility there, for all intents and purposes, and give us better visibility to the intersection. And because this is right-of-way in here and not private property, as an engineer, I'm going to look to what's the safest thing to do there as well. And we are planning on clearing that area out so you can have the best sight line possible from where Canyon Drive Loop Road comes in up to the road that we're putting in. So that's something I just wanted to make very clear and something that we will commit to. And this is a picture looking down to that brushy area. So again, the road is actually going to be widened through this piece right here as you come in. And then as you come down to the Canyon Drive intersection, this is the area that we, if Public Works will allow us to, we would also suggest putting a stop sign in at that leg. Right now, this just wraps right around, whereas that gravel leg is kind of the secondary road, whereas in reality, Canyon Drive through will be with a through road when we're done. And this will be the secondary road coming into it. So that is something that we'd like to see. And again, it's a Public Works decision on whether that's allowed or not. The other thing, too, is we're going to also make that intersection more of a 90-degree intersection right now. It's got that swooping leg, and we'll flare it out to match the existing road. There was a comment about, who deals with markings. Markings is something that's already in the staff report. That's something we contract with Public Works on, so that's been handled as well. The emergency access easement is definitely another concern I'm hearing from both ends of the spectrum, one from the residents on Canyon and one from the newbie, our Georgia Terrors residents down below in Smoky Lane. One thing we do have here is we have an emergency access easement. There's an existing access easement across the piece of property in between our property and Georgia Terrace right-of-way. It is not dedicated right-of-way. It does overlap onto the private properties on the other side. Because of that, because of the patterns up here, because of the established right-of-way that was up off of Canyon Drive, the reason that we're not proposing that as a road connection is because it would encourage traffic to come through there. The bridge that is on there, we did go out and look at that. We have structural engineers in our office, and as mentioned by one of the neighbors here, there is adequate. The beams on there actually do support fire truck loads and construction traffic loads. We do not plan on running anything but the minimal amount of construction traffic over that area, and we plan on widening the Canyon Drive piece to get into the property with construction traffic. But what we are proposing to do is to widen that access all the way through from our new road all the way down to Georgia Terrace to meet all the fire code standards that are in the code. We're gonna widen it. It's gonna be a minimum of 12 feet wide, wider in the curves. It'll be a crushed rock surface at a minimum, if not paved for a portion of it when the house actually goes in on that lot. And we feel that is the best way to do it because we're gonna bring the main traffic up what's dedicated right away now, and we're going to use the easement for what I think is probably what it was originally intended for, was for that fire access to get through there. And when it comes to the fire departments and the safety of the bridge, if there are some timbers on the bridge that need replaced, that's something that we'll have to commit to as part of the project. But the structure itself and the load bearing of that structure appears to be sound from what we've seen. We'll definitely look into that further in the details of that with construction drawings. Another thing that was mentioned on fire is the proposal for the Hammerhead turnaround. That's something that we proposed simply due to the fact that we're stubbing the street to the end of the property on the south side for it to be extended in the future. There is a possibility that that road could loop through another fire access. Those properties that are on the south side, actually most of them take access to the south. One of them has a very long driveway down the power line road. And, you know, we're looking at not cutting a giant cul-de-sac into the hillside on the slope and instead doing the Hammerhead turnaround because it was a temporary measure. If it was the end of the road, the complete end, it was never going to be continued, then we would just default it back to the standard cul-de-sac. So that is the reason why we're proposing that. And it's more of an erosion mitigation thing and not digging out the hillside for a temporary cul-de-sac that's going to be continued.
Mr. Gerlitz, your time is actually up. I'm inclined to want to give you a little leeway because you are answering questions that the opponents have brought up. So if you could, in a couple more minutes, and wrap things up, and then we'll see where we're going from there.
Okay, I'd appreciate that. Drainage-wise, we saw a lot of pictures tonight with drainage. I did go look at that culvert. It is something that the county standards actually require us to look downstream from our property within a quarter mile to the nearest drainage structure, and then any further when the drainage is 10% or above of the existing conditions. In this case, we're not even going to get close to the 10%. We are going to look at that existing drainage structure. If we do find with our calculations that it's undersized, we'll either detain water on our site or we'll potentially get with the neighbors to upsize that culvert for them as part of the project. So those increases in flows are going to be dealt with just through the typical county conditions that are already in the staff report. Drainage otherwise, there's been some comments about potentially diverting all of the project down that one drainage trail. And in reality, we're just going to, the only water that's going to go down that swale is the area that goes down there now. It's going to be paved. There'll be a very small increase, but it will be contained to that area. The other natural swale on the other side of the project will be, the drainage will go through there just like it does today. And then any issues that we have downstream, like on the fire access road that we're proposing where there is no culvert, that's somewhere where we would put a culvert in to account for that issue that's there today. And then one of the suggested comments from Mr. Hart was to also work in a vegetative fuel bank along the property on the west and the north side. So that's some additional thinning of the trees in there. And that's something that we're more than happy to comply with. We think that would be a good idea because of the houses that are down there. And we would suggest that it be added to condition one to be put into the CCNRs for those property owners. And again, on the water diversion, there's no new water. Mr. Fisher had some concerns on that. There is no new drainage areas that are being diverted to the natural swale. It's only the natural areas that already go there today that are going to be directed towards that. It's just the fact that we're cutting a road and a ditch into the property.
Are you completed?
Yeah, I mean, there's several things on here I could address for the residents if we have a couple more minutes. But that's a quick summary of kind of everything. I just wanted to make sure I address as much as I could.
Sure. Address them very quickly.
Okay. The irrigation canal was the other comment, and I did talk to the GPID. That pipe that's there, we're not going to be diverting any water to it upstream of it. So we're only going to be lengthening it. So that was another concern. I just wanted to clarify that we're not going to be worsening the existing condition. And GPID told me that they don't have any, they haven't committed to the fact that pipe's undersized. There is not going to be any gated access to the fire access road. His intention is to remain open for residents to use in a fire situation as well as emergency vehicles. And any cost associated with what we're doing on this downstream to the fire access road or Canyon Drive is going to be borne by the developer.
Okay, thank you very much. You have some papers that you may want to submit to the record, and we'll let you have a chance to do that. Questions of the Planning Commission. Mr. Wright. Oh, I'm sorry. Well,
either one. It doesn't
matter. Mr. Wright first. I looked at you first. I'm sorry.
Justin, if you'd please give us a little better definition about the steep slope where they said it's 12.8. It was my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong because I don't want to understand it wrong, that you were going to increase the slope to 15%, but basically take the dips out of it so it was more a straight shot?
Correct. The county standard right now allows up to a 15% grade on a normal roadway. There's some little dips and bobbles at the bottom near the irrigation canal. Up at the top, we're basically matching existing grade that's there today. So there'll be a little bit of increase at the very bottom of the canal, and that's just to get an adequate cover over that pipe and that canal. But it will be within county standards.
Okay, so I just want to make sure I was understanding it right, because that's what I, from the comments from the opponents, that it was, they couldn't get trucks up there, but most of them, it was because of the hump and trying to get over the ditch. And
yeah, so we're basically going to smooth out the grade as you come up off of Canyon Drive, and it'll go up the hill.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. And the bridge at Smoky Lane, is that a county bridge, private?
I don't know. I actually don't know how to answer that question, whether it's private or a county bridge. All we did was look at it for adequacy for emergency vehicles and
thank you.
Traffic.
Mrs. Richardson?
Okay. I come back to, this is Mrs. Richardson. The issue for me comes down to the roads. Will the things that you have proposed to do, it sounds like the neighborhood has a problem already with the drainage on their road, period. Is anything you're going to do going to solve their problem? It may not make it any worse, but will it fix anything, or are they still, after the development occurs, going to have the problems with the water washing across the road?
The water on Canyon Drive will be accounted for in the design, and it will be fixed from its current condition, its current issues. If that cross culvert that they mentioned that goes across and dumps out on the other side makes more sense to go across the intersection that's there today, we'll divert it across there, and that's all part of the design review process with Public Works. The culvert that's on the private property that was mentioned, as I mentioned, if our drainage that we're diverting, we're not diverting, but the drainage that we're going to have go down that swale that's there today, if it shows that pipe is undersized, we'll either detain the water back on our property in a pond, or we'll work with the property owner to upsize the culvert for them.
My concern on all of this is part of it is in the UGB,
mm-hmm.
which, and I understand from last time that the city deferred to the county for the standard, and I'm glad you raised the slope standard versus the conventional, but the concern still is that if this is a substandard road to start with, you all are making it marginally better, not necessarily to code. And for those people who get into the UGB, they can wind up with a horrendous bill, courtesy of the city, in order to bring that road up to curbs, gutters, and sidewalks at some long-term standard. So what I'm trying to understand then is, if it's not county standard, it's going to be not only substandard to county, but substandard to city too.
Well, the city's width on the road section is 24 feet.
That's the slope standard, but mm-hmm. it also includes a sidewalk on one side.
Correct.
I don't see anybody proposing a sidewalk on one side for this road, and it would actually be helpful. It would keep people who perhaps walk from being in the roadway. And if you're going to add more cars, that's an issue. So anyway, my concern is we make it better, and I appreciate the takings issue. We can't insist you make it perfect, but is it better enough for the residents? And that would be the concern.
And we're willing and looking at the design that we've proposed, and which is still not fully detailed. I just want to make that clear too. We want to widen that road as much as we possibly can within the confines of that right-of-way. And that's what we've done. The width on that thing, again, is still, right now it's a single-lane gravel road, and we're proposing two travel lanes of paved road down that whole area, all the way down to where the county maintenance ends right now currently. So we're going to take that two-lane road and pull it all the way up to the top of the hill and then all the way into our subdivision. The only thing that we're basically limiting right now is we can't fit the normal shoulder and that extra 6 inches on there. But those lanes that we're proposing, those 10.5-foot lanes, are still more than adequate for vehicle access, two-way vehicle access. And, we were on a hillside standard. Basically, they would slap a curb on each side, and that's what the width that we'd end up with. And that would have a parking lane on it as well, which we're not proposing here.
Mr. Ettner.
I understand it. You have a 21-foot paved road with 3 foot on each side for edge. Is that correct? On
we have.
You said 10.5 foot per lane.
Right now, we are proposing two 10.5 foot travel lanes, so one each direction, with a 6-inch crushed rock shoulder and then ditches on both sides.
Okay.
That's what we're proposing at the moment.
So. But you also tell me there's 7 lots proposed, 7 homes proposed,
correct,
on 40 acres. What was the factor in determining number?
Of the lots?
Yeah.
Topography and just the natural zoning, the RR5 zoning, which precludes us from going any smaller than 5.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Yes, Mr. Glenn.
Mr. Glenn, on that bridge, mm-hmm, it's obvious that a couple of those deck planks are badly damaged.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering about the entire bridge deck, if there are any other members that are unsound. Would you commit to replacing all those members that are unsound?
The owner's not here, but if we find that there is, if there's safety issues with those members, then we'd commit to replacing the ones that actually have issues.
I just don't want to see anything overlooked on that bridge.
Yeah. And again, you know, Rural Metro, one of the things they have to commit to for fire service, I mean, every project I've ever worked on, whether it be a single house or a subdivision, they come out to the house to review the access to make sure that they can provide fire service to that house. And in this case, the neighbors that live up on that road have, I'm assuming, had somebody from Rural Metro or another fire agency come up there and analyze whether they can drive a truck across that or not. And we have looked at the structure. The steel stringers are definitely adequate for what we need there. But we would be willing to look at those members that may be substandard, those couple especially that are broken at the beginning. I think those are over the top of the actual bridge foundation elements. Actually, they're not actually in the middle span.
Probably treated planks.
Yeah.
Okay. I have a quick question, sure. And maybe it's our, who owns the bridge, the one with the rotted decking?
I do not know, and okay. I don't know if Neil.
That's what I asked.
Yeah,
that's what you asked,
yeah.
Right? Okay, I guess it did get asked. We didn't get answered yet. Okay,
yeah. I'm hoping Public Works maybe can answer that.
Yes, I'll. And no other questions. Okay, thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Are there any other applicants' witnesses that would like to testify? You have 5 minutes for your testimony as an applicant's witness.
Yes, Bill Galley, senior principal of the Galley Group. We were the geotechnical, geology, groundwater consultant on this project. I want to pass out a quick map here, and while I do it,
can you hear me if I talk loud like this?
It would be best if you hand. We can just pass them around, and if you stay at the mic, we're recording this, so it's important that your testimony be recorded for us.
Thank you.
Oh, we won't count your time on this. Thank you.
I'm mainly going to discuss groundwater, but one quick comment about the drainage. If you recall in the last hearing when we talked, I had done some runoff calculations because we were looking at drainage and erosion and things like that, using very large houses, parking, driveways, roadways. I came up with a maximum in the range of 2-3% increase. If you have a gutter with water running down it and you add 2-3%, you can't see the difference. It's so small. It's not like this water is going to double. Minimal increase. Groundwater. What I gave you there, I just thought I'd pull this out. This came out of the county's GIS system, which I don't know if it's up right now. You'll notice there's zones there marked. The colors are basically for different geologic formations, but you'll see there's two sheets. One's just a bigger area of Grants Pass in the back. You see the project square there, the 40 acres, and these other zones are salt zones, identified as a salt zone, potential salt zones, when it was brought up in that.
Here, we can share.
Bill, you could put it on the screen if you have an extra one, or you can use mine if you don't. Okay, there you go. Up, turn it up, turn the other way.
Oh, sorry.
Thank you.
Okay. Trouble area water had nothing to do with quantity. It was salt. And you can see in this area right here, where it gets within about 400 feet of the project. Salt all from the geologic formation. You notice this line along here runs right along Fruitdale Creek. Granite pluton to the west, metavolcanics to the east. Salt zone all in the metavolcanics. Easy way to take care of the it's mainly chlorides in the water, is reverse osmosis. It's not cheap. It costs about $1,000 for a sink and maybe $15,000 for a house, but it's doable. In looking at this, one of the things I want to mention, though, is we talked to the Grants Pass Water Lab about the testing they've done for hundreds of homes up there and wells. And the thing that's interesting about this, and which says a lot about the aquifer, is there'll be houses on one lot that have chloride problems, and the next lot over, the well won't have a chloride problem. It's sporadic all through the area. And the thing that's interesting about that is if there was total interconnectivity with the fractures in this rock, you wouldn't have that. You'd have chloride on one lot, the next lot would have chloride if the water communicated. Indicates there's a well on one lot, does not affect the well on the other lot. Otherwise, there would be chloride communication, which has a big impact for when they talk about the wells on this 40 acres is going to affect the wells down below. A couple of things that were really sort of misinformation or misunderstanding about the pumped well on the project site. It's published as 30 gallons a minute in our table. People brought up, well, it was just a 10 gallon a minute test. And that's not an accurate statement. If you look at the data, a couple things you'll find. The 12 or 13 wells, all the ones in the area, were done 60 minute air tests. The 30 gallons a minute was a 60 minute air test, just like all the other wells that most of the people here have, the ones that are shown in our table, same test. The 10 gallon a minute test was a sustained yield test where they didn't, when you do an air test, you pump it, it runs all the way down, and the maximum you get at the end of 60 minutes is that gallons a minute. This test was run at 10 gallons a minute from the start. That's not the maximum you can get out of it for 4 hours. It was run for 4 hours at 10 gallons a minute. It only had 23 feet of drawdown. It went down in the first hour and a half, and it stayed at 47 feet. I think 47 feet. It stayed at that elevation for the remainder 2.5 hours. It did not go down. There was still 202 feet from the water level to the intake of that well. So that's a much higher well than a 10-gallon minute. That they're mixing apples and oranges completely with a misunderstanding of what's going on there. The thing that we see when we look at these wells, if you look at the table, you'll see first water encountered is all over the place at different elevations. Well depths from 80 feet to 200 to 300 to 700 to 900. Static water level, meaning they drill down, they hit water like this one on the property. They hit water at 120 feet. The water rose to 18 feet below the ground surface. It means you have 102 feet of artesian head in that well, which means it has fractures way up the mountain that are feeding this. If you look at the static heads at the different wells, the ones that are close to the ground surface, which is about 70% of the wells, they have real high yields. You look at the ones that have deep static heads, like 60 feet, they're the ones that are 1 gallon a minute, gallon and a half a minute, that type of thing.
You need a couple more minutes to summarize.
Basically, the code requires 3 gallons a minute for a house, okay? 3 gallons a minute pumped all day would be like 4,500 gallons a day. Houses use 500 or 600 gallons a day, with about 60% going back into recharging the ground. That's a well-documented fact in basins like this. So actual take is about 200 gallons, if that, a day, which comes out to something like 0.15 gallons a minute all day long. If there was no other water than what the pump test showed in the wells below, and all seven wells pumped at 3 gallons a minute, they'd only lose about 20 or 25% of their capacity. So, you know, but that's not a real situation. These wells are going to be pumping on different fractures, as we saw when we looked at the chloride all through the Clover Lawn area and the, I can't remember the name of the road right now. The chlorides didn't communicate, so that meant the water didn't communicate between adjacent lots. This, we've done a lot of basin studies, and there are places we've recommended 90-day tests at 5 gallons a minute or 10 gallons a minute. We've looked at a lot of basins where there were potential problems with wells. This is not one of them. There's a lot of water in this subdivision, and I think they'll find when they do this other test, there'll be water in the other well. Not a problem.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Galley. Let's see.
Can I make one other comment?
I always look to the right first. Yes. Okay. About one more comment.
One of the things that comes up, we've heard a lot of people say things about their wells, but nobody has submitted any factual evidence from a scientist about it. We've looked at hundreds of wells up and down the West Coast, and one of the things you find, most of these wells are 20 to 40 years old. If you talk to well drillers and people that deal with wells, every 5 to 7 years you need your well serviced. I would bet a trip to Bandon Dunes that most of these wells have not been serviced very regularly at all. When you look at cameras put down these wells that haven't been serviced for 20 years, there's a buildup of deposits on the screen. When you flush them, there's a buildup of sediment in the packing around the screen. And over time, the wells will naturally decrease in the ability of the water to get into the well unless they're maintained well.
Okay, questions from members of the Planning Commission for Mr. Galley.
Yes.
Was that you, Mr. Wright? Okay, go ahead.
Mr. Galley, every subdivision, every application that comes before us, water is always an issue, but we still have a state law that says they have a minimum required to meet. Bottom line, does this application meet that minimum requirement?
Yes.
Thank you.
Any other Planning Commission members? Okay, Mr. Galley, thank you. If you didn't get that to our secretary, I'd appreciate it. Okay, does the applicant have any other applicant's witnesses? Okay. Seeing none, I will also ask if there are any other citizens who would like to speak in favor of the project that didn't turn in a card. Mr. Hare? Okay.
So, Simon Hare, Josephine County Commissioner, and in this case, liaison to the urban growth boundary expansion. And so there was a reference made as to how the road improvement, if needed to be brought up to city standards, would be paid for. And that isn't necessarily accurate under Ms. Richardson's statement. Okay. It will be determined by the new urban growth boundary expansion IGA. Under current standards, in order for the city to take over, in most cases, there's some sort of an agreement that's reached, but it, in most cases, doesn't negatively impact the property owners. So I could see a couple of people being really concerned. We need this to be at city standards. Now, that's not the case. If the county will work that out in an IGA with them, and I don't have a long history in this, but I don't see it negatively impacting the residents. Hence the reason Beacon and Vine are still county maintained thoroughfares within the city, and we're going to work out a really good IGA through the new Earth urban growth boundary expansion. So just wanted to clarify that for the property owners.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Hare. Let's see here. I guess we are at the point where maybe I would ask other county departments such as Public Works if you have any comments or questions that you want to present.
We'd like to ask them up anyway so we can answer a bridge question.
We have an indication there might be some questions from the staff, from the commissioners, excuse me.
I'm Neil Burgess, civil engineer with Public Works. I had a few things, new things. We're trying to talk about new things that I want to cover. Drainage, which isn't new. The stop sign issue, the stop sign was mentioned on Canyon and Canyon Loop. Can you hear me okay? And then the fire access road. So the drainage, there's been a lot of concern about the drainage, and that is something we're going to look at on the plan review phase. And I appreciate Mr. Fish's reference to the Oregon Drainage Law. And Mr. Gerlitz will be submitting a hydraulic report, and we'll be reviewing that. And mainly what we're looking at is the additional runoff. Is it substantially increased? And that's what we'll be looking at. And in terms of substantially increased, we also have in Exhibit H of the conditions. We have this whole condition talks about drainage and whether the 10% increase is met and all that, and that's what Public Works has determined substantial, was that 10% of increased flow. So if there's a lot of flow existing going down there now, that's existing, and we're looking at the additional flow above and beyond that. So we have that covered. We'll be reviewing that during the plan review process. And once there's a more detailed design, then the applicant will be submitting hydraulic calculations for us to look at and review. I wanted to, Mr. Hart referenced the stop sign at Canyon and Canyon Loop. So that has some concerns from Public Works. Oregon law has adopted the Manual on Uniform Traffic Control Devices, the MUTCD, governing signs and striping and pavement markings and such. And in the MUTCD, it says engineering judgment should be used to establish intersection control. So we need to have an engineer take a look at that and offer an opinion and a recommendation. And then furthermore, pursuant to ORS 810.1101B, which Commissioner Hare is familiar with because we worked with him recently on stop sign issues, that the Board of County Commissioners as a local road authority may designate stop intersections at its discretion. So putting up a stop sign is beyond the authority of staff or of this commission. It would have to ultimately go to the Board of County Commissioners for board order to put up a stop sign. So to provide a condition requiring a stop sign, I think is a higher level decision. We could look at an engineering opinion as to whether one is warranted or not. I personally, for the low volume, it might not meet warrants because it's such a low volume. Okay, so cover that. The fire access road between Newby Drive and what's it called? Canyon?
Smoky
Terrace. Newby Drive and Georgia Terrace. Mr. Hart proposed as a condition public right-of-way to restricted residential standards. So that is the 13-foot wide paved section. The problem with that is it connects two public roads as part of a loop road system. So we need the full 50-foot right-of-way with that section in between built to county standards. So that would, it's more than just a restricted residential. Restricted residential can serve 5 units or less, and this would essentially, it doesn't fit that definition, so it'd need to be a, if you were to consider that route, it'd have to be a full-on county road. And is what the applicant has proposed was an easement emergency access road. And then under the conditions, under Exhibit H, under 12, we ask that the applicant provide a loop road system or demonstrate that the creation of such system is not feasible or practical. So that's something before the Planning Commission tonight. And we've talked about the road standards last time. Commissioner Hare talked about the road standards as it pertains to the IGA and the urban growth boundary. And that's all I have to add that's new, I think.
Mr. Wright, you had a question?
I'm on a roll today. Can you address the bridge on Smoky? Do you know if that's a private? Is it a county-owned? Do you know anything about it?
I do not know much about that. I haven't researched it. I would presume if it's in public right-of-way, it'd be a non-maintained bridge.
Okay.
So it's not on our public road system, for unless I'm wrong.
Thank you.
Other commissioners, questions of Public Works representative? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I think what I'm going to do here real quickly, and it's going to be a 5-minute, is offer the opponent's representative any opportunity to say something. Mr. Hart, I think you were the one. If you want to have 5 minutes, you can have it.
A
question of the chair before I get started. Is this part of the summation, or is this just kind of...
Well,
I know this is a different kind of a hearing.
It's a little, because it's a continued hearing. We did a summation at the first hearing, and this is a continued hearing for new testimony only. Okay. So that's why we're not following the exact order that we normally would. We are basically continuing for new testimony. Okay. So I'm giving you an opportunity to...
I appreciate that.
Okay.
Sorry. The bridge is privately owned.
And it seems consistent with what I observed in the field. Anyway, again, for the record, Bob Hart. I guess I look to you as kind of the stand-ins for Solomon tonight because of the decision you're going to have to make. The code and the primary directive, if you will, is about carrying capacity. It says, in all cases, you must meet carrying capacity. And in part of the definition of carrying capacity is that there is adequate off-site roadways to handle the traffic that's being generated. It also says there has to be adequate solutions to drainage. And those are the questions that are before you, and those are the big ones, that you've got to make a decision of what are the conditions that need to be made here. You saw from the pictures that this is a very heavily vegetated area. Fire danger is excessive in my understanding and in my judgment. So what you do in the way of roadways is going to be critical to the success of this neighborhood. The roadways don't meet county standards. Yes, they're better than what they are today. And I would say that that would be a benefit to the neighborhood. But does it meet the county standard for being adequate for the project that is before you? What was offered here, and there wasn't much testimony about, even the cul-de-sac versus the hammerhead. There is no outlet possible from that end, and so that's going to be a dead end at that point. This is from the county GIS. This is Canyon Drive coming up. Here's where Nubia is dead ending into a hammerhead. We have two 15-acre pieces right here. There is no opportunity to get down to Smoky Lane off of this side, and this area is all developed. All the lots are at maximum density. So the question is a hammerhead going to be adequate to get trucks up there in an emergency, get them turned around and back out with the vegetation that's there? Is that going to be adequate? The drainage. We've talked about, well, it's maybe 1 or 2%, or the condition says a maximum of 10% increase. You've seen pictures that the drainage, as it comes down that natural swale, is failing today. This corner of the project intersects the GPID ditch. If they would intercept all of the drainage and bring it to that point and drop it out, then they would have no impact on the adjoining property owners at all. It would not exacerbate an existing failing condition. So that's why we propose the conditions here. We looked at that connection road that we suggested it be a restricted residential because we didn't want a lot of traffic through there either. Public Works says it's either got to be the whole thing or it's got to be nothing. And the question is, how does the developer grant easement rights of access to the property owners in the neighborhood to have them legally access through that emergency access? And that is a critical condition. Is this solving the problem or not? Is there adequate off-site roads? Because the question is, can there be a loop system made? The owner of the 40 acres also owns this strip here that connects to the end of Smoky Lane. I summarized that in my submittal to you. I don't have all the answers, and I can't tell you if you should mandate a connection at this time. I just know that it's a critical decision on how it's going to impact this neighborhood to put more homes up in that high fire danger area without a loop road system and with a hammerhead that's going to slow emergency equipment down to get it out. So thank you for your time, and I thank you for your consideration in whatever decision you come up with.
Thank you, Mr. Hart. I think with that, we will close the... Oh, I'm sorry. Mrs. Goodwin?
Would it be possible to ask Mr. Groats to come up and address a couple of points that Mr. Who? Hart made? Mr. Groats to ask
oh.
to address a couple of points that Mr.
Well,
Hart
I think,
made?
Well, I think you have the right to ask that. So, Mr. Gerlitz, the commissioner has a question for you.
Absolutely.
Two questions, actually. My understanding was that the reason that you're doing a hammerhead instead of a cul-de-sac is because there's a possibility that that road could be extended in the future.
Correct.
And that a cul-de-sac would be too disruptive to the hillside for a temporary solution. Mr. Hart says that there is no possibility because of the ownership of the current development state of the properties that that could be extended in the future. And I would like some clarification.
That actually was misunderstanding. The lots to the south, they are large enough to split further, even under their current rural restricted residential zoning. I'd have to find an exhibit. But, these lower lots here and here are the reason that the Public Works Department has looked at us extending that road to that property line for the further dividing of those lots in the future.
So the Public Works Department is considering extending that as a public road.
If these lots were to further divide, you know, if you look at the size of these lots being, I'd probably say 6-7 acres, these lots can be split further into 5-acre lots. These what look like almost flag-shaped lots right now. If they were to split further, this would be the access point that they would use. So currently, they have the ability to do that. As with any development, we have to look at the neighboring development patterns, and that's the reason why we're extending the road to the end of the property, not just doing a cul-de-sac, you know, further into our development.
And the other question I had was Mr. Hart pointed out that the road, the access road that would be an easement, that the same owner currently owns that property that goes through there to the main road, the public road there, and that could then, is there... my understanding was that was an easement because it would require a 50-foot right-of-way, and that it appears from what Mr. Hart said that actually is all under the control of the same owner, and that could be done.
Part of that, so there's an existing easement that runs across this property that Mr. Hart mentioned, and then a portion of the neighboring three lots next door. These three right here.
An existing easement, what are the conditions of that easement?
It's a roadway easement, so it's not right away. It hasn't been dedicated. It's called a roadway easement, and usually that's what we're proposing to use it for, is this emergency egress route, because right now we do have rights to run an emergency egress route across that property with that easement.
And that easement would allow anybody to use that isn't just for a specific...
Yes, we would, I mean, the easement right now is for the benefit of our property, to use that across to Georgia Terrace, which is a dedicated right-of-way down off of Smoky Lane. We would propose, you know, we don't see any reason why we'd have to restrict that to just emergency vehicles. Now, we don't want it to be used as a daily traffic route for any reason, but we would not see any reason why we couldn't have the language in that easement, you know, be modified if necessary to allow the residents, if there ever was a forest fire, to access that route as well. I mean, that would absolutely no reason we wouldn't allow that.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Just to clarify, this is we are now in the discussion phase of the hearing process. So that's a phase where planning commissioners can talk among themselves and also ask questions of any of the witnesses or the opponents. So that's what Mrs. Goodwin's question was. And if there are other questions, we're in the discussion phase. So, commissioners. We may not have any other questions. Okay. Well, then I will declare that the discussion phase is closed, and I will close the public hearing on this application. And the Board of Planning Commissioners will begin their decision-making phase. So, do you want to just kind of go down the aisle here and talk about your feelings or thoughts on the proposed application? I'm looking at you because we normally go this direction, but we could start at the other end, too.
Could you, since I'm new to this...
Okay. Mr. Etner, would you like to offer any comments?
I want to be second class, but you know, I can go ahead. I've read the report pretty thoroughly, and oddly, it's one of the best geologic soil and water resource reports I've seen in a long time. Very professional job done. Hopefully the neighborhood has gotten a hold of some of those issues and read it. I look at the development as being low density, 7 homes and 40 acres. So you look at cumulative effects and so forth. You don't have 40 homes. You have 7 homes up there, which is good. You're not going to have a lot of extra traffic or everything else. The site location of those homes was excellent for minimizing off-site impacts, for all the way from visuals to cumulative effects associated with concentration of water, silt, sand, anything moving downslope, landslides, or anything else. Fire is an issue. I deal with fire all the time. That through road is almost a requirement from my standpoint. I don't care if it's gated or not. I'll take a gate out if I have to get through, since I do fight fire, and I have been in that neighborhood fighting fire, structural fires. So the roading system is the weakest aspect of it, and the roading system, the weakest part, is the existing part to access to that property. The proposal for development is far better road system, much wider, much safer, and probably, I don't know how you fix the lower thing, but there should be most of the discussion centered toward that. With the low density of development, I look at the cumulative effects as being minor. I look at the planning on the subdivision being excellent. The off-site has some needs around the ditch and the two roads. That's my concerns.
Mr. Ockenden, are you
offering? I agree with everything that he just said, basically. I think this proposal will greatly improve the neighborhood where it's going to be where it's proposed at. The fire standards, it looks like they're going to be met, and Article 76 is what I understand that's going to be met well. And the galley group addressed all the water issues very, very well. I'm very comfortable with all that right now. The site distance will be addressed as well when the vegetation gets taken out of that corner and the corner gets widened out there. So I am 100% in favor of this proposal. So
this is a good one. You got anything you want to offer?
I agree with everything that's been said. I just want to say that I was very impressed with the plan and the depth of detail that was gone into about, you know, even, you know, to how to construct the fills and the, you know, it's a very, very well developed plan. I understand the concerns of the people who are opposing this. I think that I'm not sure that all of the neighbors got a chance to read through the whole plan and see everything that was addressed in here. That's unfortunate because it's very, very thorough. So I think that ZCS has actually addressed to the extent possible a great number of the issues that were brought up by Mr. Hart and by the neighbors. I do think I would like there are some things that they agreed to that I would like to see put in as conditions, such as improving the or replacing it, any timbers as necessary in the bridge after the development is done, or the decking, to make sure that the bridge is in good condition after the development is all done. Making sure. Oh yes, and that they also agreed to drill another well, even though I don't really see that as being necessary, given what we understand about the fractures and that it's not likely that these wells are going to affect other wells. However, for the peace of mind of the neighbors and the fact that DCS has already agreed to do that, I would like to see a condition of drilling the other well. And then again, the fire breaks that were requested and that DCS has agreed to, I would like to see that put in as a condition. Some of the other requests that were made, it seems like it's not possible to make those a condition, such as the stop sign, because that's beyond the jurisdiction of the planning commission to request, or the public can do that. The roads, I do have some concern about the hammerhead instead of a cul-de-sac, because you know, we don't know whether that road will ever be extended or not. That may be permanent. On the other hand, a cul-de-sac would create a lot more disturbance of the hillside, and that would actually increase the erosion concern, which is already a concern. So I tend to think that I'm perhaps okay with the hammerhead. And based on what I heard tonight, I think that I'm okay with the easement for the access road, as long as that easement, and I'm a little unclear on whether the road easement that's there actually means that everybody already has access to that easement to get out, or if we need to put in a condition. Mr. Hart's shaking his head, so I think we do want to put in a condition saying that all the people in the subdivision do have access to use that easement in the case of an emergency. And those are the conditions that I would like to see added.
Mr. Wright, any comments?
I think it's a very well done application. Straws and water are always an issue, but state law says if they meet the requirements, then we cannot hold it back for that reason without some hard evidence to say otherwise. I don't see any hard evidence that shows me anything. They have a well that drills it. They've opted to do a second well at the request of the opposition, which is wonderful. Bridge planks is just a safety issue, and we'll condition the road easement, and I'm fine with it. I think it's met the requirements.
Mr. Glim?
Well, we've had a lot of information to digest and a lot of testimony. One of my big concerns was a water issue, and I think the testimony by the galley group and the map that's put out, I feel comfortable that there's going to be enough adequate water. The other situation was the drainage issue, and I think that's going to be addressed by the working with the Public Works Department. So I think the overall plan is good.
My comments are I also felt it was a well-proposed application that seemed to meet all of the standards and criteria of the Rural Land Development Ordinance as I saw them, as well as state law. I was pretty happy with the conditions that staff originally proposed to us at the last hearing. There was some question at that time of staff condition number 10, that the right-of-way lines at the intersection of Canyon Drive shall be rounded, and that this was, I think there was testimony that was impractical, again, due to the structures, and if we were going to propose some conditions, I would eliminate that one sentence from condition number 10. In regard to additional conditions, I'm pretty much agreed with Peggy and that I see no problem if the developer is willing to go along with certain conditions that are added. Although I felt the county conditions were satisfactory, but if for the peace of mind of the adjacent property owners, I don't really have a problem with that myself either. So, I guess that's where I'm at. So I would be in favor of this application with conditions from the staff in the original report, as well as the conditions, and I don't even have them summarized here, but the conditions that were agreeable to ZCS Engineering as representatives of the applicant.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion.
Can I?
We have a question.
Question, sure.
Well, no.
I'm sorry, I passed over you. I apologize.
I think we're all going to say nice things about Mr. Galley. I appreciate the effort that he went to with the water. I now understand that situation, and particularly with the salt and how variable it can be, and that one can have salt and the next one doesn't, and what that says about the geology. I also want to compliment the opposition. They were organized, they had pictures, they did it right. Whether we agree with them or not, they did it right and properly. And I appreciate that. I'm not too concerned about the hammerhead. I had occasion some time ago to talk to Chief Henner of the city on how they handled hammerheads, and they say that's not a problem even with their big trucks. So the only thing I could see is that particular hammerhead intends to use the 25 feet of someone's driveway, and that may come as a real shock to the person who buys that property to realize that they're actually a hammerhead and that they're going to have a lot of potentially large equipment using their driveway.
But you'd want it using your driveway if it's
well, but I'm just saying, if you're one of those people who think you're going to have a lot of flowers and things at the front, you're probably not going to do that if they're building it. I remain a little bit concerned about the easement. You know, the roadage, as it was explained, is the hardest part, and I think they're trying to make a bad situation a little bit better. So it's kind of, I'm encouraged by what they're doing. Whether the neighbors will be satisfied when they're done remains to be seen. But I think that the applicant has satisfied the criteria.
I just wanted to add one other thing, is that in regard to Mr. Fish, and I know he was very concerned, you were very concerned about the drainage, and I just feel very comfortable, at least sitting here as a planning commissioner, that the drainage will be handled in a manner that is appropriate with county and state law, and they've made me feel comfortable about that, and I that's all I can say. Okay, now everybody's had a chance to talk. Mr. Wright, you wanted to propose a motion.
I propose a motion that we accept item 2.1 for approval, subject to the following Exhibit H with modifications I will now state. Staff recommendation number one, to add vegetation field break as agreed. Number 10, to strike out the right-of-way line, as agreed. I would also add the following conditions, and I believe they've all been agreed upon. Number 22, prior to final plat, to drill the second well. 23, shielded lights on all construction. We talked about that at the last hearing. 24, commit to any safety issues to the bridge planks. Specific. 25, the road easement to extend to the new subdivision landowners. That is my motion.
Okay. Do I hear a second?
Yes, sir.
2 seconds. Mr. Edner or Mr. Glenn? Mr. Edner seconded the motion. Okay. So we will go down the row and call the roll for the vote then. Is that correct?
Yeah. All in favor?
All in favor.
Commissioner Chair?
Oh. Church? Yes.
Commissioner Edner?
Yes.
Commissioner Glenn?
Yes.
Commissioner Goodwin?
Yes.
Commissioner Offaly?
Yes.
Commissioner Ryan?
Yes.
Commissioner Richardson? Yes.
Okay. Motion for the approval of this land use action is approved. And we thank you all for your participation in this public hearing. Now, moving on to other items that we have on the agenda this evening. Planning Commission business. Is that anything that that would be things that the planning commissioners want to bring up? Mr. Ittner. Planning Commission business. Anything that planning commissioners want to bring up?
I just want to see your face.
Nope.
Okay.
Question about...
go ahead. Well, Mr. Glenn first.
Mr. Glenn, I had a question about our future policy about site visits. I'm sort of in favor of site visit because I'm visual in nature, and it's like with this plan we just went through, it's just so difficult to visualize everything as it all comes together. We get photos that are pieces of a puzzle. So I just wondered how the other commissioners felt about that.
Mrs. Richardson, how do you feel about that?
I'm the one who got in trouble for doing it. So, but I was surprised to find that as a group, you all could not do that because under state law, the Oregon state statutes not only allow for planning commissions to visit sites, they actually give you permission to go onto the ground. It's very clear. And that was a curiosity to me. I appreciate that we cannot talk to anyone because that falls under ex parte comment or contact, rather. But I do think that when I was on the City Planning Commission, it was extremely helpful, especially when you have slopes like this one, to kind of look and see for yourself what a 15% slope is going to look like, or a 10% slope, you could see it.
Mr. Lewis or Mr. Black, do you have any comments on that? I also have the same problem, and I'm thinking it might be nice to talk to Mr. County Council.
Yeah. If you let me chime in first, and I'll just throw some history. Commissioner Wright, we used to do site visits. We'd load up in a van at the county office, and they'd shuttle us or a couple Jeeps or whatever it was. It's county legal that stopped it. So it wasn't something that was done from the commission, and now maybe with the new planning director, he can revisit that information. But I wanted everybody else to know that we used to do that. We've been to the gravel pits. We've been up dirt roads where subdivisions are being put in, and it's good. But it is.
We will revisit the issue, and we're planning to do a workshop with the commission here primarily to review the regulations with regard to review of major sand and gravel operations, because you've got a hearing coming up on that proposal.
But Sunny Valley.
Also include in that site visits, ex parte contact, and all of that. And I think I can't give you the history here, but generally planning commissions are allowed to go as a group, and you usually notice those things so that the public knows that the planning commission is going out there. People are allowed to observe, but not to discuss amongst themselves, just like if you were a jury. After testimony is over and you're discharged to go home and all of this, you're not supposed to be discussing what you heard with other jurors or with anybody else. And so I think that was the concern that was raised at the initial hearing, was that an individual commissioner had gone out. Well, the potential is that you could come into contact with a neighbor and have discussion, and that in some way would influence a decision one way or the other. And then it also brings up the practical matter that you have to come to a meeting and disclose that to the site visit, and you have a discussion with the person who was in the impact area or an applicant, and then properly describe to somebody what went on. They get the full nature of what went on, so it's an issue we'll bring up again. I think I personally agree with you that being on the ground and actually seeing the site. I mean, two-dimensional photographs are just very limiting as to how you can really understand what's going on the site. And it, I think you would certainly benefit by actually making site visits. But we will look at the legality and see if we can't get something established if that's possible.
Yeah, maybe you could, when you talk to Mr. Rich or whoever you're going to talk to, maybe have him chat with the city attorney and see what why they don't quite agree on that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we did it both ways. When we were looking at a park that the city wanted to do something with Baker Park down here that has the river access, we went as a group under Jim Huber, who pointed things out he wanted us to see. So he was acting as the planning director, but showing what was going to happen. The other, we did go on our own. It was just with the understanding, and if you'd ever attended one of our meetings, it was to see each one of us say, I went out there, or so-and-so approached me, because people will obviously approach you, and you have to say, I'm sorry, I can't talk to you. You know, I can't disclose any of this. And we routinely did that. It was not a strange thing.
Right.
So this was very interesting to know that the city attorney had said, now obviously if this development's in Cave Junction and we get to trot out to Cave Junction, maybe the interest in going there is not quite the same.
Yeah, the geography is a little different. But
when we went to the OPI Roseburg 5 years ago, they had a three-day course for the Planning Commission,
right.
And they brought all the lawyers and everybody in, and one of the things they said, even in there, was if you're not as a group, you cannot make a special detour to go visit a site. Now, if you drive by the site or it's a regular travel and you see it and you observe it, that's one thing. But,
The state statutes let you walk the property. You're the one of the few places that can is the Planning Commission can actually walk a property. State law, it's not trespassing.
We'll hash all those things out.
We'll let Mr. Lewis look that up and chase it out.
Okay. Any other Planning Commission business?
I have one other question.
Oh, okay.
I noticed that you all finally did it towards the end, but I didn't notice, is there an official mechanism? Like when the fellow discussed all the things he was prepared to do, There didn't seem to be an obvious mechanism to include all of that as criteria until the commissioner.
Well, that's my job.
Mr. Wright is very good at that, actually.
Your whole job down there is to do that.
That's why we keep him on here.
I make notes while they talk. I make my commission or my conditions, and then I make notes as to what. Whoever's got a complaint, and I don't care if it's pro or opponent, makes no difference to me. Mm-hmm. If they have a legitimate complaint, and I think that one lady that was up here in the green shirt did a huge disservice to her group by coming up here, and she got so sidetracked, and she got whiny.
But the others
there's
did
no facts.
A stellar job.
Yeah, they did. But this commission bases their judgments on facts and what's presented to them. Somebody gets up there and starts whining, that's immediately, I'm tuned out. Until she comes back to a fact or addresses something that's in our packet, I don't care what she's saying. So I want to listen to the facts. I want to hear something that's going to address what our application is about.
Good for you.
This way I've always done it. Now,
well, it's nice
how
that
everybody
you do that,
does it.
But if you're gone,
I know Margaret
does someone
keeps
take your place?
She's got a whole novel going over here. Where
she's good, too.
I just write small sentences. But, you know, it's just each commissioner's way of doing
so,
to understand.
So you and Margaret are not allowed to be gone. Someone has to do this.
Okay. The next item you had on the agenda for us was citizen involvement business. Is that something we need to are these just boilerplate stuff? Comments from the public. I see two members of the public sitting out there.
He doesn't want to comment.
He's here for instruction. Planning director's report.
Just following up and letting you know that we actually do conclude some things here. The McMahon plan zone change is working its way to finality here. It went through the finding stage. There was no appeal to the LUBA on that decision. It's had its first reading of the adoption ordinance, the second reading of the adoption ordinance. It's this Wednesday finally over with. I mentioned workshop. We want to try probably sometime in early April here to schedule the workshop where we can talk about the regulations as they relate to review of aggregate applications, because you've got one coming up on April 28th. It's scheduled for the Sunny Valley Sand and Gravel.
Are we going to do a
April 28th?
It's not on my calendar, I just got.
It's not on the calendar.
But are we going to get to do a road trip? Because I really would like to see that.
I guess we'll find out.
So
April 28th is the hearing date. You want to have a workshop prior to that.
Right.
What is that hearing? Is Sunny Valley?
That's Sunny Valley Sand and Gravel, April 28th. And we still have some decision-making to do internally here. And we'll work with the Planning Commission Chair on that. We haven't distributed materials to you yet. The application packet is behind this
Oh, it's
been there before.
There's a lot of material to go over that material in the workshop. We're intending to go over our rural land development code as it relates to
procedures.
Which section do you have to look at, or the criteria, so that you are better prepared when you get to the hearing to know how you, what rules you're applying to that.
What's happening on the idea that you mentioned to me about the tablets?
Okay. We're doing something innovative here at the request of the applicant. It's a very costly thing to produce these binders, so the applicant is proposed to make electronic tablets available that will be loaded with the entire application and all the supporting materials. There'll be a tablet for each one of the commissioners to review. We'll also have CDs that if you want to use a laptop or home computer to review the material. We will also have a limited number of the binders so that at the hearing, paper will be available, electronics will be available. We'll have the CDs beforehand. Obviously, we'll be using overhead for presentation and review of the materials. One of the requirements that we placed on the applicant as far as the tablets goes is that since there's 800 pages or more, that it had to be looked up. You can't be required to scroll through things because, you know, somebody might be referring to page 700 and then you switch over and say, well, now I'm page 50, and it would take just a long time to get there. So it has to be looked up so that if you want to switch to a page, you can just basically punch in the page that you want to go through and hopefully, we're going to give you multiple ways of reviewing the material, and that's going to work for you and it's going to work for the applicant.
Since this is going to be such a huge amount of material to review, can we get a little more time on the to review it than we usually do?
Well, we're going to start distributing that information here pretty quickly.
Let's do the workshop soon.
Well, we're going to go in as quick as we can, but we're hoping that we will give you basically, you know, 4 weeks of time that you have the material.
We're only, what,
That only gives you 14 maximum days.
Jeez.
This is the
17th to the 28th. Don't put it on the guys.
So is there any other issues?
Just that we're still dealing with the matter of how long it's going to take to get through the application and presentation.
Okay.
It's going to be a multiple night.
Oh, yeah.
It may have to continue on, and then the question is whether we continue on to the next night or there's a time interval soon. Issues least for the applicant's consideration as a consultant. How many trips do they have to bring the consultant? So those are issues that we'll try to work out between ourselves, the applicant, and the chair.
Is there an option of starting an hour early, say at 6 o'clock? Is that possible?
I don't think it's going to matter. You're going to have a two-night minimum.
I mean, if they get as angry as the people in Applegate did, it could go on for weeks and weeks.
Yep.
But I'm just thinking at least give it, and so that the later it runs, the tireder people get.
Okay.
Nope.
Any other items? Okay, I declare this meeting of the Planning Commission adjourned. Thank you very much.
Justin's pretty good in galley cars. That's such a good proposal.